You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Well, I'm asking for a fence of patience because we're in the first year of that transition. I thought that the way we finished the year shows some promise. It's hard to win games in this league and to finish 15-5. Yeah, it's not a victory lap, but I think there's some positives.
Picking 12th in the NBA draft will be the Chicago Bulls.
It's a good way to set up our next guest as we go to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is time for Joe Calley, the Bulls Sun-Times beat writer, and the man who can finally tell me if the NBA draft lottery is rigged. It felt that way, Joe.
You know what? I mean, this is what this country's come down to. Everything's got to be a conspiracy. Like, there's billions of dollars at stake here. I hardly think that the NBA said, you know what? We want the epicenter of NBA basketball to be down in Texas with San Antonio and Dallas and Houston. So I was thrilled for Dallas. I like a GM who takes big swings, sometimes swings and misses, but this guy has swung for the fences for a couple of years now and has gone through the ringer the last couple months for a deal that I still didn't think is as bad as everyone thought it was. And the reward for being an aggressive guy and for looking to make instant change is Cooper freaking Flagg. So God bless the Dallas Mavericks and the NBA gods smiling upon him. But conspiracy theories, I'm not much into those.
Joe Calley, I did not know you were on Team Nico. Okay, I have people jumping on my bandwagon. I was like, could he have gotten more? Yes. Was Anthony Davis a guy that he should get to try to keep winning? Absolutely. I am on board. We are aligned, sir, and I appreciate that. And that being said, I think we're aligned on the Bulls, too, and where they stand, which is they're sitting down right now. Is that how you see things?
Sitting down, they're on one knee.
Oh,
they are down on one knee because they know that they are stuck in mediocrity for the next 5 years, and it's their own fault. I mean, they created this philosophy, this failing philosophy of building a team out, of playing with pace. The only thing they've done well is change the shot profile to shoot more threes, because as the playoffs have shown us, you need superstar talent, not 10 guys. That doesn't work. You're playing with pace is a cute little gimmick for the regular season and might get you to the 40-win plateau. But as the playoffs have shown us, this is about physicality. This is about what you could do in a half-court set. This is foxhole-type guys. They don't have many of them. Everything AK is doing from a philosophical standpoint, besides upping the three-point shooting, is wrong, 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 and you deserve what you get.
Joe, that is where I sit with this. And Marshall, just so you're aware, poor Joe had to join me the day after the Luka trade on one of the solo shows I hosted way back. And the question that Joe asked when Kyrie was healthy at the time was, what if they get to the finals? To which I yelled back at Joe, they're not going to get to the finals.
You got lucky because Kyrie got hurt. We'll never know what could have happened.
And then the first person I thought of in the possibility of the Mavericks going to the finals whenever I saw that news was who? The man on the phone right now. So I appreciate you going full circle with us on all of that. But the bigger picture that I wanted to also illustrate, Joe, is that you don't want, as an organization, the difference between one coin flip to be the first and the 12th pick in the draft. They had some say in this if they wanted to.
Oh, it's not even that. I mean, that's the gut punch, the instant reaction that I think a lot of people are talking about. To me, the gut punch came at 2 and 3 with San Antonio and Philadelphia, because you were in their zip code when you traded Zach LaVine and they were contemplating shutting guys down, whether it was injuries or more, you know, like there's some people that think Joel Embiid, if they were a 4 seed, would have played through that knee, possibly. You know, obviously the Wemby thing, you have to shut that down with the blood cloth. But we saw Lillard come back quickly, quicker than expected. Could Wemby have? Who knows? But you saw organizations that said in February, we see the tunnel, we see the big picture, we see what's at stake here. And you have to understand draft talent and when a class has talent that it's worth pulling the reins on. Arturas doesn't recognize that. He just goes forward, forward, forward. And, you know, everyone's like, well, look, you know, look what they did at number 11 last year at Modest. Again, that is you not understanding the draft. There was no difference between number 1 and number 15 in that draft last season. This draft was way different. There was, to me, a generational game changer that I put in the same breath as better than Wemby, will be more impactful than Wemby. I'd probably have to go back to, he won't ever be LeBron, but as far as his all-around skill set and his mindset, it's very LeBron-esque. And then you go, well, 2, 3, 4, 5 also could be special. So maybe we want to dip in that pool. No, we want to make sure we go 15 and 5 and get our asses beat by Miami and make sure butts are in the seats. That's never a question. And just worry about building the team out because we trust our draft process, which they've hit one time in really the last 5 years. So, again, I don't feel sorry for them. This is their aired way of thinking, and now it's kind of come to roost.
I want to make sure I heard you right, Joe. You said Cooper Flagg, in your opinion, will be better than Wemby?
I think Cooper Flagg will be better than Wemby. I think Cooper Flagg will be the face of the NBA in the next 5 years.
Wow. Okay, so that's big. Now, here's my issue with the way they're handling things right now. There's no indication that there will be a hard left or even a soft left or a soft right. It sounds like we're going to do this all again next year with another very talented draft class and be right back in this exact same situation where we're hoping and praying that maybe the Bulls could get somebody with a 1% or 2% or 3% chance to get up into the number one spot. And of course, a single digit chance to get a top 4 pick.
Yeah, I mean, there's Peterson, there's AJ DeBonsa, there's Boozers, one of the twins. I mean, and again, the one thing AK doesn't do is when he speaks publicly, he very seldom lies. So when he is saying that our mentality is still to win as many games as possible, that's not going to change. It's not like hard lessons were learned this offseason. If anything, extensions will be given this offseason. They'll likely be secret extensions because that's the way the Bulls operate. But because they got to the play-in and because they feel like, well, we've changed the shot profile, we've made a more exciting style of basketball, let us see this thing through. You can guarantee that extensions will be given. I just see them. They painted themselves in the corner with this roster. Where it gets interesting is what 26 offseason looks like, not draft wise, but because of all the expiring contracts that will be coming off. You know, who do they move come February? Who do they try and move come July when free agency starts? But for the most part, I think we're just going to see same old as far as this roster and this mentality from this organization.
Joe, what does see things through even mean? I think that's the question we're all on a day-to-day base, week-to-week, month-to-month, season-to-season, asking ourselves. What does see things through actually mean?
Right. Well, I mean, as I reported going back to even last year, this is a dictatorship. This is Arturas. I mean, people want to point fingers at the Reinsdorfs or Mark Eversley or whoever you want to coaching, whatever you want to point fingers at. The final say on this roster and the way they're doing things is on one man's desk, and that's Arturas. That's why there's so many guys fired, because once you speak your mind, they'll listen to it once, but then you better be quiet. If you continue to speak your mind, you know, that's why a Peter Patton's gone, and that's why Steve Weinman's gone, and the analytics department only has one person in it right now. This is an Arturas philosophy of how this team is going to be built. This is an Arturas philosophy of how they are going to play until mid-April with the pedal down all the way. So see this thing through means the one thing the Reinsdorfs have said is you got us into this situation and it's your job to fix it because we put that trust in you. So he is going to be given the time and the allotted time to fix this. And so, contracts, I think, are coming up for Billy. I think contracts, I think they all have one more year left. Arturas may have two. He may have extended himself one more year. But again, we aren't given that information because the Bulls operate in secrecy in that way, especially with their front office. So, this is where we're at. He's going to be allowed to see this through. I mean, look how long Gar Pax went on and on. And, people think it ended because Jerry somehow got sick of him. That's not how it ended. It ended because Pax got sick of it and went to ownership and said, I think my time is done in this position. So that's how it ended. It didn't end because of billboards and fan outcry. Let me tell you something. Jerry Reinsdorf really doesn't give a damn about fan outcry, media outcry. And the idea that fans somehow can change the Bulls or the White Sox by not going to games or doing that, Jerry doesn't really care about your attendance. He just doesn't.
Joe, I also want to ask about this. Here are the draft lotteries in Chicago. The draft combine is in Chicago. These are things that what we take seriously. You know, it's some of what honors basketball in this city. Modest Buzelis was the Bulls representative. AK declined comment. We saw guys like Daryl Morey.
Well, that's not 100%. That's not 100% true because he was only going to speak. We were told that morning he's only going to speak if they move up to number one. He never speaks at these. He always sends out. They allow the player that is there and present as their good luck charm, whether it's Julian Phillips or Modest Buzelis, to go ahead and address the media, which again they don't have to do. But so the idea that he was somehow pissed or angry about the outcome or was going to speak and change his mind, he was only going to be given to the media if they hit number one, because obviously that is an organizational seismic change. So the idea that he somehow backed out of time, he only talks 3 to 4 times a year. And this is not an event he talks at.
Okay, because there were various reports on how that went down as to whether or not he was commenting. So I appreciate the clarity. What did you think of what Modest had to say?
I mean, Modest, the one thing about Modest, especially if I give Bulls public relations a lot of credit, because when we got Modest as the floppy haired little kind of teenage kid on draft night last year and even into fall camp, I was like, this is going to be rough. And public relations has kind of worked with him to let him just be his own personality and not be gun shy or somehow reserved or kind of watch what you say. And I'd say the second half of the season and even lately, he's become a pretty good interview. He's pretty self-aware. He's pretty introspective. And the thing I like about him, he's just not afraid. I mean, he's just a great starting piece. I don't know if the ceiling is all-star. I don't see an all-star anywhere on this roster. I think he's probably the closest to it because of his two-way ability. But it's when I think of Modest and what he did, I instantly go to, could you have imagine what that would have teamed up with Cooper Flagg, or could you imagine what that would have teamed up with Dylan Harper, or worst case scenario, Philadelphia and San Antonio, worst case scenario, they would have fallen to three if they would have played that game. Or it's an Ace Bailey or Trey Jones or VJ Edgecombe, whoever you kind of like. I mean, could you then see the excitement that would have been around this franchise? Instead, there is no excitement. One man has killed the entire buzz with this organization and made them irrelevant, and it goes on AK's desk. He has to wear that.
I did appreciate Modest also talking about giving his scouting report on a lot of the players that he knew. Like, that part of it was really good. Like, I was impressed by him as a representative. You know, it's not ideal, but at the same time, he did speak a lot about him being the success story at 11 and then also him talking about who he saw.
Yeah, and that's the thing about him. He's really kind of opened up, and he's – I think – you know, like Lauri Markkanen, his first year or two was really rough, and then he really developed because he has such a dry sense of humor. That kind of came out, and I see Modest as kind of being a go-to guy within a year or two. And I think, you know, the organization has not only developed, I think, him from a talent standpoint. I love the way that Billy's handled him and with the tough love and the short leash and minutes are earned, not given. But, you know, a credit to the Bulls public relations department, because I think they've gone out of their way to understand that he could be the face of this thing, and dealing with the media is an important piece to this.
Well, Joe, I appreciate the time. Marshall does too, of course. We'll call you back when Aaron Rodgers is on the Steelers, because why do I have a feeling that's coming up in a few days?
Thank you so much, Joe.
Oh, it's coming. The schedule is going to be released, and then baby Jesus is coming to Pittsburgh. And he'll still own the Bears this year.
Did you just call?
They play, and he'll still own the Bears. Wow. Mark it down.
Wow. He just called Aaron Rodgers baby
Jesus. This is Hot Take Tuesday. What a day for Joe Kelly to be on the show. Joe, thank you so much. And I wanted to give you credit. You deserved it after talking me through a very rough day after the Luka trade.
And Nico, we trust.
I'm not going that far, but I appreciate your part in all of this. Joe Kelly from the Sun Times, always entertaining. He was a lot of places last night if you didn't get enough of Joe. Highly recommend just looking up Joe Kelly draft recap.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
feels great. Since it's the first day, you know, getting a taste of what it's like here. Really exciting, really happy. I mean, not only, you know, to be here with my family and stuff, but also to be able to have Roma Dunze at number 9. It's pretty sick, right? You know, so really happy, really excited, ready to get going.
That was Caleb Williams after he was drafted first overall by the Bears last year. Why are we going back that far? Because of an article on ESPN that just came out detailing quotes from his dad, Carl, in part of a blockbuster book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback that is set to be released in September. The author of the book now joins us on the Circa Sports Hotline. Download the Circa app today. It is Seth Wickersham of ESPN and the author of this book who got the quotes from Carl Williams, Caleb's dad. Thank you for joining us on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Hey, great to talk to you guys.
Seth, we're just so curious because this came out of nowhere in terms of we're moving on with Ben Johnson as the head coach, Caleb Williams getting a fresh start after what had to be a frustrating rookie year in which his team lost 10 games in a row. And so much was unearthed here in these quotes that you got both before the draft and I guess the update when you talked with Carl Williams again after that rocky rookie season. Help us understand exactly what Carl's mindset was and why he wanted his son to avoid playing for the Chicago Bears and ultimately what changed their minds.
Well, look, I think that Carl is a very astute guy. And we can talk about, you know, the unhinged quarterback dads all we want. But there's like a point to this, and that's that a lot of the success for quarterbacks depends on luck and it depends on your employer. And he wanted his son to have the best chance of success and to go to a team that, you know, had an established and innovative offensive mind. And, you know, he wanted to try to figure out ways for that to happen, whether it was, you know, he tried to find like any loophole he could. He consulted with lawyers, people like Marvin Demoff, Archie Manning, who helped do a little bit of that with Eli Manning back in the day. They considered whether to sign with the United Football League, you know, for a year and then be if that would let him be an unrestricted free agent now. But as it got closer, it was just clear that their options were limited. You know, the only thing he could really do was return to school. He didn't want to do that. And so they went forward with the draft process. He went to the combine. He met with the Bears and he met also with Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Vikings. And he really vibed well with O'Connell, so much to the point where he kind of started to dream of working with him. Obviously, that was a real long shot because the Vikings are a divisional rival, and I don't think the Bears were going to trade Caleb or the pick to a divisional rival. So it kind of left it to them as like, you know, what are you going to do? And Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, told Caleb, we're drafting you no matter what. And so really his only option was to try to do what Jack and John Elway did in 1983, and that's, you know, go after a city and make it, the situation untenable. Carl Williams was ready to do it if that's what his son wanted. But at the end of the day, Caleb didn't want to. And as he told me, I wasn't ready to nuke Chicago. And, you know, after he visited the Bears, he came back and said, you know, I can do it here. I want to be a Bear.
I think, Seth, a lot of the way this is constructed, the reports from Carl to you,
mm-hmm.
they take a lot of blame off of Caleb Williams. And I, you know, obviously that is that's how we're reading it at face value. And I know that he has that reputation of wanting to do everything he possibly can for us. So we knew all about the team that Caleb had around him leading up to this draft. What was the sense you got as far as when he was telling you these things? The intent, was it an honesty? Was it candor? Was it the fact that he's lamenting the fact that he's here? What do you think it was?
I don't know. I mean, I spent time with, you know, Carl and Caleb before his final season at USC. You know, obviously Carl and Caleb to a certain extent were thinking a lot about the draft in the lead up to the draft. So little bit of a ongoing conversation. And then, you know, I just kept reporting on it. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's a boring answer, but it's kind of how it is.
What about the piece where you talk about Shane Waldron and Caleb mm-hmm. Williams not knowing if he could do that, if he could work with Shane Waldron. What point did that conversation take place? We're just trying to draw a timeline, because obviously Shane Waldron lost his job, as did Matt Eberflus later on in the season. Can you give us some type of timeline?
Well, so when Waldron was brought in, I think that the collective reaction from the Williams camp was a little underwhelmed. And then they met, and, you know, and Caleb's actually spoken publicly about this, but, you know, he was kind of wondering how they would vibe. And I think it was fine, but he really vibed with Kevin O'Connell. And Kevin O'Connell obviously played quarterback. I think he was a 4-year starter at San Diego State. He played in the NFL for a bit. He's an outstanding offensive mind. And, you know, it really got Caleb energized. But I think as the process went on and he visited the Bears, you know, I think he was energized by the idea of helping being part of the process to turn that team around.
And then also same kind of question with the timeline. You describe him watching film, but had no one to guide him and tell him what to watch. At what point of the season was that? Because, this is a guy who's now on his third play caller with Ben Johnson taking over as head coach. I'm just curious as to when he started to realize he wasn't getting what he thought he needed.
Yeah, it was early on and during the season. I think that, you know, he said publicly he wanted to be coached hard. And I don't know if he quite felt that way, you know, once the season was going. And I think that he's really eager for Ben Johnson to coach him hard and to challenge him. And that quote stands out, and it, you know, it makes you shake your head at what's going on in the NFL at times. And, you know, that happens quite a bit. I hate to say it. It's such an indictment on the league, especially at the game's most important position. But, like, you know, Alex Smith has talked about it, and I talked about that with Caleb, where, you know, he was the number one pick of the draft. He goes to a team, and he's watching film by himself. No one taught him how to watch film. And so when he later on in his career goes to the Chiefs and they draft someone by the name of Patrick Mahomes, you know, Alex Smith really took it upon himself to teach Patrick these things that no one taught him, how to watch film, the ways you do it from the inside out, that type of thing. And, you know, that's the type of instruction that, you know, the Bears didn't provide at times for Caleb Williams. And I think it's a massive indictment on, you know, that staff.
This is ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham. The book American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, is publishing in September. The article that we are discussing with him are excerpts from Caleb Williams' dad, Carl Williams, talking to him about his son, the draft process, and then what happened afterward. So we have the quote here that you have from Williams, Seth, saying, "I don't want my son playing for the Bears," Williams told several agents in 2024. Mm-hmm. After that reported discussion where Caleb Williams then told Carl, he didn't want to nuke the city, were the words that he used. He didn't want to go against this city. What became Carl's attitude?
He was supporting his son, but he was skeptical. I mean, you know, look at, you know, Carl Williams on Twitter. You know, you can Google it, but, you know, he would tweet things that were, you know, things that made the coaching staff look bad. So it was pretty obvious, you know, how he thought the season was going. And, you know, they didn't play well. I mean, everything he thought could happen, sadly, did happen. I mean, he saw it coming, and that's one of the reasons why he was so passionate about his willingness to take bullets and do what was necessary for his son to have the best chance of success.
Yeah, I think I measured that as Carl Williams being a protective dad, as he should, and wanting the best for his son. I can certainly see where he's coming from in all of this, especially given how last season actually did play out. My question is this: have you had any communication with Carl or Caleb since the Ben Johnson announcement? And if so, what has the attitude been towards Ben Johnson, just in relation to maybe how they described everything before, specifically Kevin O'Connell?
I saw Caleb, I want to say it was after the Johnson hire, and it was maybe early February, I want to say. And I did ask him if, you know, he obviously, like, you know, when he came out and he was drafted and they called his name, you know, he wheeled around that corner and you saw him scream, just let out that huge exhale, that release. And I did ask him whether, you know, the scream that he let out when Ben Johnson was hired was similar in terms of emotion. I think it was. I think he's pretty excited.
I think, Seth, also, you mentioned that scream, and even as I'm picturing it right now, knowing the information that has been released already as part of this book, I think there's a lot of us who wonder what it really meant, if it was truly genuine. You know, how much did that draft visit matter when it came to all the other quotes that you have before?
Which quote?
Well, just all the quotes about not wanting to come here.
What I was trying to take people into was just a little bit of their deliberation process. Like, how serious it got, it was ultimately Caleb's decision. He made the decision as a grown-up, and he, you know, believed he could make it as a Bear. And, you know, we'll see how it goes.
I'm really interested because the book, American Kings, A Biography of the Quarterback, mm-hmm. this is just one facet of it. I know you had access to so many just legends, John Elway, Johnny Unitas, mm-hmm. Warren Moon, the members of the Manning family, as you talked about, Steve Young, mm-hmm. also Kirk Cousins and Drake May, currently playing in the NFL. What was your biggest takeaway through the process of writing this book on the state of the NFL and the quarterback position?
Oh, man. You might have to ask me that again in September when it comes out, when I've had a little bit more time to think about it. I mean, you know, I think what's fascinating is just that, you know, a high school quarterback is not a college quarterback. A college quarterback is not an NFL quarterback. An NFL quarterback is not a generational one. And yet they all have something in common. And when you sign up to do it, especially in this moment of time when it's such a big position and the adulation and the celebrity around it is so great, I think it requires a really unique skill set. At times, you know, you need to be the therapist for the team. At other times, you need to be the biggest jerk on the team. The ego required to go through a game, to enter, you know, walk onto a field on game day without doubt, without feeling doubt, I think is really fascinating. And, you know, a lot of those things have been true as long as the quarterback position's been around, and hopefully people enjoy it.
Seth, how close do you think the Williams family was to actually not being drafted by the Bears in some way, either getting out of it or having one of these plans come to fruition?
I mean, I think it was like, you know, the gasoline's out, do we want to light the match? And Caleb didn't want to light the match.
Wow.
Looking at the experience you've had talking to these quarterbacks, and whether it was agents, whether it was members of different organizations, you know, what Carl Williams said about the Bears being where quarterbacks go to die, he's not the first person to say that. My question mm-hmm. is, through your research, your conversations, how dysfunctional did the Bears appear to be compared to other NFL organizations?
Well, I mean, the head coach and the offensive coordinator didn't make it through the season. So, I mean, you know, this isn't exactly the LA Rams offensive operation. Let's just put it that way.
What were your takeaways from the definitive quote, I think, too, just from Ryan Poles, where it says in this article, Bears GM Ryan Poles stood firm telling Williams we're drafting you no matter what. What were your takeaways from the tone, and then also anything you gleaned on the Bears side of it from that that quote as well?
It reminded me a little bit of like Ernie Accorsi in 1983, where, you know, he basically is like, my job is to pick the best player, and that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, he picked Elway, and of course, within a week, Elway was traded for, you know, not much of a haul compared to what the Colts could have gotten ahead of time. The Bears were all in on Caleb. I mean, they did not scout Jaden Daniels. You know, they were all in on Caleb. And so, like, you know, he was their guy. And, you know, how, whether that was wise or not, you know, who pans out, who doesn't, you know, a lot of that has to do with luck and circumstance, but, you know, the jury's out. And, you know, Poles made some decisions. He let go of the head coach. He brought in a new one. He got a guy that I know a lot of offensive minds around the league study and steal from. And so I think that, like, you know, there is that opportunity for Caleb to have the pieces in place that maybe would have been better to have a year ago.
I think it also just illustrates the apparent conflict there was and the tense nature of the situation at the time, where it implies that the Bears were aware of what was happening and they already were going into this knowing they might not have a willing participant. Is that fair?
I mean, they had leverage. They had the ultimate leverage at that point. And so, you know, what teams say is football players play football. And, you know, Caleb Williams is a football player. And, you know, so I think that they, you know, believed in their process to make an impression on him throughout the draft process, and they did. And I think that, you know, he was sincerely excited to be a Bear and be part of that turnaround process, you know, as I detailed in there. Obviously, the first season was a mess, and, you know, we'll see whether Caleb turns out to be, you know, the exception to the rule that the Bears haven't had in a very, very, very long time, or, you know, as Carl told me, where he says Chicago is the place quarterbacks go to die.
I mean, when you,
every time you say it, it just elicits a reaction, like every single time.
I think the reason why, Seth, is because it's not even an original thought. So many different people have said it, from whether it's a fan, whether it's media, whether it's agents, whether it's a parent. It's been said so many times. We're hoping that trend is over here in Chicago, but there's no evidence that it is. But it seems like at the time, right now, that they've put a structure in place in which he can succeed. Because right now, he's not even the best quarterback in his draft class by performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing is everyone's fates are tied, right? You know, I mean, Caleb's fate is tied to Ben Johnson's, whose fate is tied to Ryan Poles, whose fate is tied to their success. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Seth, again, just thank you for your time. The book is called American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham. I know we've asked you a ton of questions about this article. What else do you want to share with us that you think is valid for the audience to know, and just what they can expect, you know, either out of the book or just more background?
Well, I mean, the book is a broad book. I mean, it's the most, I hope it's the most comprehensive look at this position and this unique American job with uniquely American responsibilities, and what it's like to do it from high school to college to the NFL, and what it's like to live with it, you know, in retirement, and, you know, how it came to be, why this position, you know, ended up taking over, you know, shortstops on college campuses and center field for the Yankees in pro sports. And I think there's just a lot of cool stuff in there. And, you know, Caleb's a character in it, and his story matters, but there's a lot of stories in there that I hope people enjoy.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. We look forward to more articles coming out in connection to this. Something tells me this won't be the only one. Is that fair to say, at least?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, hopefully it won't be.
Okay, so more articles that'll come out previewing this book, American Kings, a biography of the quarterback, ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this massive piece of news with us on The Score.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40.
period, that's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hello, Nico, and happy birthday from the Spiegel and Holmes show.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. No place I'd rather be chatting it up with you guys.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely.
We appreciate you lying to us for sake of a radio bit, and it works for us.
Oh, man. We have a present for you, too. We're very excited. You want the present now, or do you want the present at the end of the segment, Nico? It's up
right
to
now.
You.
Get
you
want, to it.
Right yeah. now. All right. Our friends at Rinaldi's, and you've been over to Rinaldi's in Lincoln Park.
Many times.
The hot honey soppressata, I know, is a favorite.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they have offered you a chance. We in Rinaldi's are offering you a chance to create the pizza of your choice, the Nico Horner, the Nico Horner special, sir.
Whoa.
So you get to decide what's on it. And a portion of the proceeds for every pie sold will go to the charity of your choice, Nico.
Wow. That's an incredible opportunity. This is, you got me thinking. That's a big decision.
So what initially, like, what are you thinking? What might be on the pie?
I mean, I'm so biased towards pepperoni, but that's they've got to have all those things already. So, like, there's got to be a twist to it. And ideally, it would be something that, like, both tastes good, is unique, because it has to taste good, because then if it doesn't taste good, no one gets it, and then there's no money to charity. There's a little writing on it, too.
Yeah, right. There's some strategy, so you can take your time, you can think about it.
Yeah. Do I get to go over for, like, a workshop and get to test things out, or what?
I'm sure we could arrange that, and I'm told they'll also, once you decide, they'll deliver a big pile of them to you and your teammates over there at the ballpark.
Yeah, I want to do, like a pizza flight. Get them all lined up.
Oh, there you go.
Actually, that might not be a bad idea for the whole thing.
We're going to look back and
Nico's pizza flight.
It's going to be like 20 years from now, and Nico's place is going to be open, you know, the restaurant somewhere in Chicago, and be like, remember when he got his start on the Spiegel and Holmes show? This could be that moment.
It'll be franchised. There'll be one out in Oakland.
That's right.
Yeah, this is exciting. Wow. Well, that's very generous. I'm pumped.
Well,
good. We're glad that you appreciate it. And it definitely was done with love. Speaks was like, let's do something fun for Nico. And it works out great. We love our friends over at Rinaldi. So this is a very cool way to get everything connected and involved.
Did you hear
100%?
Did you hear Pat Hughes in the open talking about you and Dansby Swanson on that double play in the first inning? That's the Hall of Famer Pat Hughes. Poetry in motion is what he called you guys on that double play. That's cool.
Yeah, that is absolutely very cool. And I know he gets fired up about particular things, really get him going. And so it's cool to be a part of a play that, you know, really catches his eye.
You grimaced at the end of that play, though. You were like grimacing and kind of like shaking your head towards Dansby. Did you think the throw was a little behind him or something?
Yeah. I put him in a bit of a tough spot. He made a great play.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are beautiful to watch out there as a pair. Have you done anything to develop that chemistry, or like, how has that chemistry happened, you two as a double play combo?
Yeah. I mean, I think you can do a lot in practice and behind the scenes, but it really happens at game speed that, you know, those things really become second nature. And we've turned double plays at a high rate this year. I think, you know, part of that last year was me not throwing as well at times too, but I felt like we left some outs on the field at times. So those double plays just make such a big difference in the game. Really change momentum and kill entire innings and allow starters to get into the seventh and all that. And it's awesome to be a part of those plays.
Even though you primarily play second base, you grew up as a shortstop. Do you think that gives you some insight on how to help make the turn for Dansby?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times at second base we get caught up in, like, trying to do things perfectly, like having the perfect rhythm or, like, And I think a lot of times it's literally make it as simple as possible, like run and catch it and then just put it on the guy's chest as quickly as you can. Like, we had a double play later in the game that was, I was kind of shifted over towards the hole with Mervis, and it was hit to my right, but I still threw it overhand, which is kind of unconventional, but it just, it felt like the right thing that I could most quickly just get the ball right to his chest. And that's kind of how I think about it. And it's not always like the sexiest, but I think it's usually works pretty well.
What's it like to play behind Colin Ray, who was absolutely dealing last night?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it all starts with his fastball and his fastball command. You know, he's been really aggressive with his four seam, and I think that's maybe surprised some people, but having faced him last year, like, he has a really low release height and good carry and velocity on his four seam in a way that just makes it challenging to square up his hitters and opens up the rest of his mix when he needs it. And he really was just on the attack from the start yesterday, and it was great to see.
We mentioned this to you last week because we were talking about Mother's Day, but Spiegs and I had kind of put together and said, Mother's Day, like, that's when we'll have a little bit of an idea of what the 2025 Cubs are all about. And here you guys are. You're above 500. You're in first place. With you guys inside that clubhouse, considering the way that the schedule looked, considering the injuries that you guys have already had to deal with, how satisfying is it at this point to be as good as you guys are?
Yeah, man, I think it feels good. I don't think it feels like we've really, like, gone off or played poorly. I feel like we've been ourselves for the most part. And like you said, there's going to be things that inevitably go wrong within that, whether it's health or tough stretches. And, you know, every team deals with that at some point. But I do feel like all the things that, the couple things that haven't gone well this year, whether it's tough losses or injuries, that the response to it has been really great. And that's what you really look for from a group. And I think that reflects real confidence too, that regardless of what happens, you always have a good thing coming and a good response to it. And it might not be that day, but just over the course of time, you're going to be in a really good spot.
Nico Horner on the Score is sponsored by Huntington, home of the asterisk free checking. More at Huntington.com/your money.
That's an interesting answer, because you are committed to being level, it seems. And that's a good way to be, because, like, yeah, we're kind of over the moon. Like, man, these guys have played well. Look at them. They're 5 or 6 games over 500. But you don't think you guys have gone off. Is that what you said? You don't feel like you guys are, like, playing out of your minds at any point like this?
Yeah, I mean, there were some stretches early where, you know, there's those offensive explosions where, like, wow, this is really something special. But when I look across just, like, the entire lineup and our group, it's not like, oh, man, this is going to really, like, I hope we can hold on to this, or, like, you know, feelings like that. Like, and part of that is just, like, not – projecting out too much. I know that that's your guys' job and is a huge part of baseball, but like, that's also, I think, a part of how those special things happen, is, like, not really putting limits on things and just seeing how they play out. And I think we're all really benefiting from each other having success, and I've had plenty of guys go through tough stretches already, which is going to happen again, but it's also much easier to handle individually when the group as a whole is producing like that.
You know who showed a little bit of frustration the last couple of days, and I hadn't seen it? Kyle Tucker, just a tiny little bit, you know? And it's like, oh, look, yeah, at that. He's human. He's human. There it is. Like, he grabbed, he did the Pete thing where he took the bat and it looked like he was going to slam it into the ground, but he didn't slam it into the ground. You know, he just kind of thought about it. And then after that triple, it looked like relief. So I don't know. Everybody's human, I guess, on that team, even that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes it's extended stretches of not getting results, or sometimes it's when you're feeling really good and, you know, you might be having a good day that day, but you know there was things in your control that you didn't take advantage of. And sometimes just the headspace you're in when things going on away from the field. Like, it's always a combination of things. And, you know, every day is a unique thing on it in the major leagues. And like I said, just makes it so much easier to handle all that when you're around good people and other really good players.
So, look, I don't want you, I'm not going to allow for you to take the easy way out on this one, Nico. There are a lot of great stories that are on your team. And just, like, off the top of my head, I'm like, look at what Colin Ray's doing. Look at what Matthew Boyd is doing. PCA, obviously. King Tuck. Dansby's offensive bounce back over the last couple of weeks, what the catchers have done, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Which one of those stories, or maybe one that I didn't mention, resonates the most with you?
Probably the catchers. I think it's just a position in baseball that I don't think can be emphasized enough, how different what they do is, just the amount of information that they handle on both sides of the ball, the physical beating they take, inconsistent at bats, and I think just their attitude. Like, I think you guys maybe get a feel for that from Carson and Miggy, but they're just both really hardworking, selfless guys that are, even if they were just catching as they are, we would be in a great place. But for them to be producing it, I feel like they should just like both go to the All-Star game and like a dual package kind of thing, you know? Like, it's been really, really special. And it's just a position that if you get offensive production from there, like what that does to your lineup compared to the teams that you're playing most of the time is just a really, really special thing. And big moments too, not just empty stats. Miggy's had so many clutch hits, and just super pumped for both of them.
Man, I love the idea of the two of them going to the All-Star game as a tandem. That should totally happen. I thought Miggy did a great job with Cade Horton the other night, didn't he? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just exciting because, you know, you hope that those two guys are working together for a long, long time. And Cade was so great. Just the way he carried it. Results aside, like, he could have had no runs, he could have had three, whatever. But, like, just how aggressive he was in the zone against a really, really good lineup that's playing well right now. And I think that was everything we could have asked for from a debut from him.
Hey, so Moises Ballesteros is coming.
That's right.
So that dude's fun, isn't he? Tell people what he's like as a ball player and as a hitter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to get to know him better. I've obviously shared spring training with him, but it's different in the season, obviously. And just excited for him. He's got just one of those pure, beautiful lefty swings that you can't really teach. With a combination of bat to ball and power that, you know, as so many guys hit for power in the minor leagues, but there's that, but they're striking out at 25-30%. And that's a little harder to believe in sometimes than a guy who's, I think his walks and strikeouts are pretty even. And it's all fields, it's lefties, it's righties, it's fastballs, it's breaking balls, it's power, it's situational hitting. It's a really, really pure bat, and just super excited to see him get an opportunity.
Nico, you talked about Cade Horton coming up. I'm curious if the interaction between players is different when it's a pitcher being called up versus a position player.
I mean, I think pitchers, when they play, it's like always such a big deal that they're pitching that day, right? Like, kind of like, not that you don't talk to a guy, but you're like so aware it's their day pitching. Or position players, it's like, I mean, debuts are always a big deal, but I just feel like there's more interaction. And obviously I just spend more time with the position players in general. So excited to have a new guy around, and pumped for him.
Yeah, that's funny. The pitcher's like, oh, don't mess with him, it's his pitch day. Like, he gets to do whatever he wants. I love this story that Dansby's been having just one sip of Nicky Lopez's energy drink every night.
And I don't know about that, but I'm not surprised. Nicky's great with energy, and he doesn't need any energy drinks, I don't think, but I guess he's supplying them for other people. And yeah, he's a great, great clubhouse guy, and spreading the love.
Yeah, Dansby last night, after, you know, these last 13 games, as Lawrence said, the offense is outrageous, and he's crediting one sip from Nicky Lopez's energy drink every night. So you haven't seen that. Go ahead.
Yeah, my experience with Nicky has been more or less soup related. He's big on soups, and he has a list in his notes app of ranking clubhouse soups so far this year. So I don't usually venture to the soup. It's kind of like mysterious, looking off to the side, and I don't usually go that direction, but he hasn't skipped one yet, and I've started to follow his steps a little bit.
All right, that's amazing. So this is like visiting clubhouse soups, like anywhere? He's a soup guy at every stop?
Yeah, we always have one at home, which I don't think I was even aware of for a long time. But I think we haven't ventured to the visiting soups yet. I don't know how much of a thing that even is, but the home clubhouse is always consistent with it.
Do you have a favorite soup?
Favorite soup? Yeah, I mean, we just had a chicken noodle soup that was really good today, honestly. So that's probably my most recent one, but just very solid, basic.
Make sure you ask Nikki about his Chipotle gold card. He has a Chipotle gold card where he gets anything he wants from Chipotle. He's extremely proud of that. So
do you have to spend like a certain amount of money over your lifetime in order to get that, or
what? I'm guessing that there's some sort of connection that way, but the fact that he has one, you guys should absolutely take advantage of it.
Yeah, the baseball players are high consumers of Chipotle in general. Yeah,
really? Yes.
It's a safe choice. It's always there for you.
Well, the texters are coming through with lots of suggestions for the Nico Horner special.
Oh, yeah. What do we got?
Well,
I need some thoughts.
I like the one of the cycles flight.
Yeah.
That one's good. This texter from the 712, Nico, says you should do a flight and it should be cycle related. One topping option, two topping option, three topping option, and four.
Yeah, but I got to hit for the cycle to do that.
So Carson Kelly, we're not letting him do a Carson Kelly special.
Well, I mean,
you got to earn that.
Well, it's one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because I'm looking at the numbers here. 100 off the bat, 26 degrees, 384 feet. Did you think you got that one last night?
No, that was an immediate out the second I hit it.
Oh, man. We're dreaming.
100 to center field never goes unless the wind's blowing out. So. Mm.
Damn it.
But it had to. I mean, that's still pretty good exit velo. It felt good to hit it, but then you're like, hit it right at that guy.
Great process. Zero chance of production. The one to right later in the game, I did think had a good chance of getting down. That would have been a nice double or triple to fit in there. But yeah, good swings.
I mean, how about today? A dinger, home run, you know, birthday dinger? That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Let's do it. I'm all in.
Sell out. So other textures. Go with the triple pepperoni. Three different types. You can do three different types of pepperoni.
Yeah. Just go all in on that.
And then somebody suggests not, because you love the hot honey soppressata. How about the hot Horner soppressata?
Oh, that's good.
I mean.
I know, but then, okay, that's good. I really like that. That's definitely a foundation of some sort. I do feel like I'm just biting off a style they already have, though. But
well, you could use the hot Horner or the hot honey and some other combination, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
It would make. I mean, it does work from an alliteration standpoint. It would make more sense if Nico was a third baseman. The hot Horner, like that.
Oh,
would be,
yes, that's true.
That would be so dope. But we can still make it work.
We're flirting in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, we're definitely getting somewhere. That's for sure. Nico, keep it going, man. It's fun to watch this team. Happy birthday. We're glad you're a part of things, and we'll connect you to the Rinaldi's powers that be.
Yes, please. I can't wait, and we will hopefully report back next week with a more solidified sense of some options.
Yeah, run it past the clubhouse. See what they say.
Yeah, this is big stuff. I'm excited.
There we go.
I agree. Nico, thank you, man.
All right, guys. Thank you. Let's have a good one today.
All right, man.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What I'm going to be curious to see is what guys look like when the ball's not in their hands on offense. Okay? Yeah, you're right. We have a lot of weapons. And so how are you going to run your route when you might not be number one in the progression, okay? How are you going to block your teammate when he has the ball? Because if you do those things right, then as a coaching staff, we're going to want to get you the ball a little bit more.
We are talking to Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show, kind enough to join us for another segment here on Rahimi Harris and Mark Rohde on The Score. And I think that's a good place to pick up where we left off, is that concept, Robert, of Ben Johnson sending messages, because I think we all heard that as well, and we saw it a little bit in how they drafted too.
Yeah, I think so many of these things, maybe I'm reading too much into it, feels like he's talking directly to DJ Moore every single time he's at the podium, which maybe is what you need. Like, I think that culture in the NFL is often set by your best players, your highest drafted players, your most impactful players, and when those guys don't play a certain way, it can bleed into everything else. And I think the Bears have made a pretty big commitment to who DJ Moore is within the context of the organization, and getting the most out of somebody like that, I think, would go a long way in making everything feel a little bit different.
I agree with you. I mean, I think of DJ a lot throughout this whole process. I want to go back really quickly back to Colston Loveland. Was it Ben? You said the souped up Matt LaPorta. Was that a Ben Johnson line?
No,
or was that your line?
I said that. You're before the draft. That. Yeah, the first time I watched him, it just you watch the route running in the open field and just kind of the way that he moves and the fact that you can line him up all over the place. And he's bigger. I think that he's a little bit more explosive. Like Sam LaPorta was the 34th pick in the draft, right? Yeah. And so you draft the guy 10th overall. You hope he's a souped up version of that guy as a prospect. And then, but I believe Ben Johnson was on the record after the draft and saying that Colson Loveland reminded him of Sam LaPorta. I think he said that to Colson Loveland.
He did, That's why I was trying not to conflate what you had said with, with what he had said.
This was independent. It was it was the first guy that came to mind when I watched him, you know, the Fresno State game that he played and then a couple other games that he played last year. I was like, that's just Sam LaPorta with like another inch and a half and more explosiveness.
And I know things got to happen and it has to actually happen on the field. So you think the sky is the limit for this guy.
I think he has a high upside. Yeah. I think that if you look at the movement skills, again, that Fresno State game early in the season for Michigan this year, they were just using him like a wide receiver. And so you watch some of the route running ability and then the body control is extremely impressive. Like he'll make some twisting catches up the sideline. Tight end is always a dicey proposition in the first round. I think that a little bit we're getting ahead of ourselves with him and Warren in terms of what they're going to be early because of what Brock Bowers did last year. History will tell you that first round tight ends, it's a dicey place to draft those guys. But in this draft specifically, I think you can make a solid case that he had as much upside as any player they could have taken there.
You don't want it to be Adam Shaheen. I'm sorry I did it. I brought up that name. I'm sorry.
Hold on. I want to get back to DJ Moore because the way you mentioned him and you felt like he was talking specifically with him. I think the thing with the way I look at DJ Moore, obviously they went out, they traded for him, they gave him the extension, and he's played now 7 seasons in the NFL. He's never been on a team with a winning record. So I see him as this sort of hinge that if he's bought in, fully committed, there's no questionable plays in the middle of games where people are trying to figure out, wait, did he just quit on that play? Was he hurt? What's going on? That seems to be like one of these players. It's him, Tyreek Stevenson, where I'm going to be able to tell a lot about where this team is culture-wise by the way these guys are performing and the way they're acting as well. Is that a fair thing to say?
I absolutely think it's a fair thing to say. The people have said this, and this is always what I look for too. Culture is how well your wide receivers block and how well your DBs tackle. That's what culture is. Like, if you want to feel whether a team is bought in, those are the first two things that you should look at. And I would just encourage people to go look at what DJ Moore was doing sometimes when he didn't have the ball last year and whether or not you think the culture was healthy in Chicago.
I mean, one was blatant. I mean, where he steps
up. There were a lot of blatant ones. The one that everyone remembers was there, but you could probably pick out 20 examples over the course of the year where something was left wanting in those moments.
And to your other point, I remember a particular, there was a running play, I think, in the Southwest somewhere before like halftime where people weren't tackling.
Are you talking about Oscar DeMercado running for 2,000 yards in the first half?
To give him his respect, that'd be Amari to you, by the way. Amari DeMercado.
Amari.
Isn't it Amari or is it Oscar?
No, it's Amari. Did you say Oscar?
You know who I was? I was in baseball brain. I think I was in baseball.
That's okay. I just like it.
Thank you.
Oscar was like traumatic to me.
Oscar
Mercado.
I remember tweeting after that game, after the Cardinals game, that it was the low point of the Eberflus era. And then the New England game happened the week after.
That's crazy, right?
At home. Yeah.
Because you were thinking, okay, they're going back home. They're going to get it together and at least put up a fight at home. When I say they rolled over and died at home, it was amazing because I was like, I didn't think that was possible in that manner.
They were the worst team in the NFL at that point, the Patriots, weren't they?
They had like 30 sacks
on the year.
Mays.
They had 9 of them in that game.
Unbelievable.
It's brutal. I mean, and I honestly appreciated that day because sometimes you hem and you haw about what teams should do, right? It's like, oh, should they move on from this guy? Should they not? And then that game happens. It's like, well, he's getting fired tomorrow. Like there's nothing else you can do. Like that coaching staff can't come back.
But he didn't
and coach
the
offense again. The offensive coordinator did.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Hey, the Bears did business. I got no criticism. They fired a head coach for the first time in their history, and they got rid of the offensive coordinator. So
I also think it's worth asking Robert because you're so tapped in into the rest of the league, what the viewpoint was at that time of the failure that was going on here.
I think that there was a concern heading into the season. It was the concern that I had in that bringing Eberflus back and going out and getting a guy like Shane Waldron, you're shooting to be like the 15th best offense in the NFL. And I just don't think that's what you should be shooting for. It was my problem with their process in the moment. I think you don't move on from coaches when you think that you're headed in the right direction and you think that it would be more disruptive to move on than it would be to keep somebody. And I just don't think that was the case when you're drafting a quarterback number one overall. Like, the defense making strides in the back half of the 2023 season is not a good enough reason to bring back a defensive-minded head coach who has shown an inability to find the right play caller with a guy that you've been maneuvering to get with a number one overall pick for 2 years. So they've hopefully kind of made up for that sin in the way that they've handled this offseason, but there was really no reason that Ben Johnson couldn't have been here the year before. Like, that was an option, and I think it's one they probably should have explored, and I think other people did too.
I'm sorry, I was distracted because I was looking at the restaurant database because I'm getting ready to go into that portion. I want y'all to exhaust some of the football stuff before I turn the page, though.
Okay, I'll start. The retirement of Derek Carr, and I said to you during the break, I feel like both Carr brothers have had unsatisfying career arcs when it came to quarterbacking in the NFL.
I think for David Carr, that's absolutely the case. When you're the number one pick, and obviously, I remember that. You remember that ESPN, it was an ESPN commercial for the NFL draft. I think it was in either 2004, 2005. And they had photoshopped out his offensive line. And it was, the tagline was like, "What does your team need this offseason?" And it was based on Derek Carr or David Carr's rookie season. So I think that was always kind of doomed from the start, just based on what the Texans were working with early on. With Derek Carr, I think it's more complicated than that. Like, Derek Carr, we were talking about it during the break. He's 22nd all time in passing yards. He had 11 seasons. He's made $200 million playing football. As a second round pick, if you look at the history of second round quarterbacks, it's not very good. Like, it's hard to find quarterbacks in that range of the draft. So I think in some ways, Derek Carr was better than what his draft slot would dictate. But I think in others, and the two teams I would go back to, I actually really enjoyed the 2020 and 2021 Raiders teams with John Gruden as the coach. They really slung the ball around. It was an aggressive offense. It was very fun. And I think part of my experience and just the way I look at Derek Carr is, why couldn't have it all been like that? Like, why couldn't he been in these situations where he was pushing the ball down the field a little bit more? He's kind of this paradox of a player where he's got a ton of arm. He can really, really push the ball downfield, but the uneasiness and the skittishness in the pocket and his unwillingness to kind of stand in and do that kind of stuff, I think probably took away from what he could have actually been.
I think the thing with David Carr that amazed me was he just had no chance early on. He has two of the top three most sack seasons, including 76 times his rookie year. 76 times in a 16-game season.
Do you think it didn't come to mind when we were watching last season?
Yeah. Yeah, because Caleb Williams tied his other mark of 68, that, you know, that number that hangs over us. And I will be happy if Caleb Williams just takes less than 40 sacks this year.
That would be a huge step in the right direction.
That would be remarkable. And then the other quarterback question I have is not about the Giants room, which I think somebody should do a show on. But it's what do you think happens to Aaron Rodgers?
I think he probably ends up in Pittsburgh. I just don't know what their other options are at this point other than trading for Kirk Cousins. And at this point, I think them, all things being equal, being able to just sign Aaron Rodgers outright versus having to give up something in next year's draft for Cousins when you want to maintain as much ammo as you possibly can because of what you're probably going to have to do to find a quarterback, I can understand why they think Rodgers is the more attractive option.
Any chance you think he'll just walk away?
Sure.
Yeah. Like I'm leaning more and more towards retirement every day.
And if that's the case, then I think that Cousins is the thing they have to do because I feel like they have to try to salvage the season in some way if they can. And he is still available.
We're talking football with Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show here on Raheemy Harris and Mark Grody on the Score. And Grotz, I know you've got a thought.
Well, I just have one question. And I know I'm going to say the name of this person and everybody's going to go crazy, but I'll just ask it. Do you think Bill Belichick will ever coach in the NFL again?
No.
No. He's done.
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like the league kind of told them what they thought of him this offseason. Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising to me. And it's not surprising to me on a few different levels. I just think that the way modern NFL coaches work, it's really, really hard to consolidate that level of power throughout the entire organization. And it's really hard to consolidate that level of power throughout the entire organization when you've been bad at a lot of the stuff. Right? If player acquisition's been bad, staffing has been bad. I just don't think people want to make that bargain with Bill Belichick at this point in his career. Like, the idea that you would hire Bill Belichick and then Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels and the entire band would be coming with him, it's not something I would want to sign up for right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the Maze restaurant list, there we which go. Is pinned to the top of your Twitter profile. There are 103 restaurants that are listed.
Updates coming this week.
Updates really? Are coming this week? Okay.
Updates coming
okay.
this week.
Is it the Beast? Oh, wait. Yeah, that's another
this thing. Is the Beast yeah. of yeah. Chicago restaurants.
So what I want to know is, of these restaurants, if I just had to go... I have somebody in town, and I just have to try one of these restaurants.
This is way too simple of a question. I need like 10 more details.
I'll give you details. I'll give you details. Let's scratch some cuisines off.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to say no sushi.
Okay.
Aww.
I knew that was going to be your response. We're also going to say, let's say no Chinese. No, yeah, actually, we'll just narrow it down to one genre. Italian. Give me your top Italian restaurant in the city of Chicago.
I mean, it's not that creative to say, but I think Monteverde is still probably the place I would okay. go for Italian.
I've been there,
and so that's the problem is with that, you have to get so far ahead of it when it comes to reservations that it can be a little bit tough. Other than that, like, I like Daisy's still. Daisy's is a local neighborhood restaurant for me. I live in Logan Square, and so I've been there a million different times. I think that's a good pasta place. I'm trying to think of other good Italian. We don't go out for Italian that much, if I'm being honest. If you look at that list, there is not a ton of Italian places on there.
Is there one that would go, because you don't really have any, I'm from the South, you don't really have any like super comfort food on here. So what is the most comfort foodish that you would go off your list?
Like fried chicken?
That could qualify, yeah.
Just like, well, Southern food in general, like if you want to go down and get, I mean, Virtue to me is like one of the best dinners in the entire city down
and there
in
too.
Park.
Okay, I feel like I'm doing well with this list.
Virtue's really, really good. There are a lot of places I haven't been that I want to go. Like, I actually haven't been to Big Jones. I haven't been to Luella's Southern Kitchen. I haven't been down to Rue.
Big Jones is great.
So all of those places are spots I actually want to hit. Comfort food, other than that, like, I'm trying to conceive of like what I would think of as comfort food.
Well, I like good dumplings. What's the best dumplings?
QXY is where I would go for dumplings.
Okay.
Down in Chinatown.
All right.
They've got a ton of really, really good ones. That's probably the place I would recommend the most for that.
I like the organization and also the versatility of this list.
There's a lot of different ways you can go with it. There's a ton of different ways that you can go with it. I try to have something for everybody depending on like what the occasion is, right? Like, if you want to go big, there's some big spots on there. If you want to have a really, really casual place, or like, you know, tacos, there's a lot of taco places on there. So I was getting so many questions from people.
I like tacos.
There's a lot of good tacos in Chicago. There's a lot of good Mexican food in Chicago. I was getting a lot of messages from people. They'd be like, where should I go eat?
And I was that's like, just too vague.
And I was like, well, here's 150 places. Like, let me know where you end up.
What's the Maze? Do you have a top five? Can you narrow it down to five?
Ooh, the
if
places
you say
that
five,
I would,
and then there's seven, I'm not going to be mad.
So in terms of like my favorite, if I had an unlimited budget where I would go eat in Chicago, Oriole is still like my favorite like occasion type of place. I've been to most of the big ones here, and that is still like the most memorable meal I've had in Chicago in a long time. When I have people come from out of town, like brunch at Lula Cafe is like a pretty standard thing, especially as you get into the summer. The Logan Square Farmers Market is right outside, so there's no reservations. So you go put your name in, and then you can just walk the farmers market for an hour, go pop in for brunch. They have a standard brunch menu, but then they have specials every day, and so every week. And so we just get everything on the specials menu. And so it's a different meal every time we go.
I like that.
I had people in town for work a couple weeks ago for the draft, and if you need something that you can get a reservation, it's classic, it's reliable. Avec is still awesome. Like, it's been there for 25 years. It is so, so, so good. Boca is really underrated in terms of like, I think the Michelin star places. Like, we went there for the first time last year for my wife's birthday and really enjoyed it. Elska is great. And then in my neighborhood, Giant and Mito Kai are like two of my favorites. I absolutely love Giant. That's Giant the closest restaurant to my house.
Giant is outstanding.
So yeah, it's hard to list off a bunch of them, but Hai Su Vietnamese is fantastic. It's down in Pilsen. Marisco San Pedro, which is like a Marisco's place. It's just all Mexican seafood is down there in Pilsen now. It's in the old Talia Hall, or it's in the old Dusex space in
yes.
Talia Hall.
Yeah.
So you could never get to all the places you wanted to get to, I guess is what I would say.
I got to get to work. Robert Maze, thank you so much for not only your football thoughts, but your Chicago restaurant thoughts as well. Anything else you need to keep the people noted of before you get out of here?
The Athletic Football Show. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. We do it more often than we should in the offseason, so it's available to you.
Hey, Colson.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's Ryan Poulsen from the Bears. How you doing, man? Hey, I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good. Ready to be a Chicago Bear?
Let's go, coach. Come on, let's go.
Let's go.
So with the 10th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Colston Loveland, tight end, Michigan.
Really, with Colston, it starts with the person more so than the player. Listen, and I love the tape. I love everything about the tape. But when you get to know him as a man, it's really intriguing. It's who we want to be going forward, in my opinion.
You know, I asked him about his hand strength because not only can you see it when he catches the ball, but when he blocks. And he was like, have you ever put up wire fence in Idaho before? I said, no.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome in the newest Bears top draft pick. It's Colston Loveland, tight end from Michigan. Colston, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, it's great to talk to you. We're really pumped up for the beginning of your career and the entirety of it, for God's sake. Were you surprised that the Bears were the team that took you? Did you kind of suspect that you would be the first tight end off the board and that you had connected with them a little bit?
I know throughout the process, I definitely had connected with them. Met them a couple times, especially at Pro Day. Felt like that was a good meeting. But, you know, you're never too sure. Anything can happen. So it was a little unexpected, but once I got the call, you know, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Felt like I did good in the meeting.
And, I'm very appreciative and thank God for being the first tight end off the board. But, you know, like you said, it's just getting started. I haven't done a thing yet here, so got to go prove myself now.
You were not able to take part in the rookie minicamp, but you did pad out. I thought that was interesting. In terms of your observations of how Ben Johnson coached the rookies over the weekend and just your overall impressions of the Bears' first-time head coach, what would they be?
Yeah, a big fan. He's very detail-oriented. You could tell just everything, the alignments, the splits, everything's got to be perfect, which is how it should be. You know, he wouldn't want it any other way. Very smart, intelligent, obviously. He knows ball. I'm a big fan. I'm excited to see how it keeps going.
So we know that you told the general manager you ever put up any wire fences in Idaho before. That was awesome. Will you ever have to put up any wire fences again? I mean, you got your contract done. Did you buy the family a new farm? How far does that money go in Idaho, for God's sake?
You know the market's kind of high everywhere these days, but if I ever go back home and they need help, I'll definitely help them. Never too good for that.
How has this played back home? You come from a small town. We've made a lot out of that. You come to Chicago, and certainly there's a lot of anticipation and excitement of what you can do on the field. But how would you describe what this has done to your family, to your stature back home, and how you will always be a kid from a small town in a big city?
Yeah. The family's super excited. They're super proud. But I couldn't have done any of this, obviously, without them and their support. So it's just kind of cool to see this all unfold. It's something we've dreamed about, something we've talked about. And to see it unfold, it's pretty cool. But like I said, it's just the start. I got bigger goals. I want to go win. You know, we got to go win games. We got to go do stuff. Got to go prove ourselves. So just ready to get out there and get the ball rolling, really.
So we understand that you, had the AC joint, the injury last year, your last year at Michigan. And, you know, just watching some of the tape, it looked like a very painful injury. I mean, there were different times where you were wincing when going down, when getting hit, but you played through it. Was there ever a consideration of stopping that season? You know, obviously you didn't have the same quarterback there. You guys were a national championship team, but you were in transition a little bit. Did you ever think about trying to get that surgery done earlier, or did you feel just too much of a commitment to that? And how are you doing now?
I'm doing great now. Finally, you know, it's good to get it fixed, but maybe things would have been different if I actually knew throughout the season that I needed surgery, but I didn't know I needed surgery till after the season. And then just playing through it, like I've always been taught and just growing up, like the team's first, you got to do whatever to help the team win. You got to play through injury sometimes, you got to play through pain, and that's something that I did for sure. Like I said, it's all about the team, and I put the team first and everything. So however I can go out there, do my job, and help the team win, that's what I want to do. So,
talk with Bears tight end Colston Loveland here on Mullen Haw on The Score. So, Colston, we have described you as a wide receiver in a tight end's body. A lot of people have used that characterization, and I wonder how you feel about that description. Is it accurate in your mind, and does that maybe take into account the fact that, you know, does it not take into effect that you're also a quality blocker?
Yeah. I mean, I think I can do it all. Obviously, we've got a lot of room for improvement in all parts of my game. But, I guess you can take it however you want to take it when people say that it's a tight end or a receiver in a tight end body. My route running separation I get is very good. This needs improvement for sure. And I think in the run game, just consistency, but there's good stuff on tape, but, we're at the higher level now. So things are going to get turned up a notch. So I just got to continue to work on my craft, get better, and, use the guys around me, the vets around me to get better. And,
So obviously when you think about what happened last year with the injury, you played a lot on the outside. You were like a matchup nightmare. You mentioned your route running ability. It's been commented upon by everyone, but you've also played in line. You just didn't get to do a lot of that last year. And when you think about the NFL and you think about the position you play, there are so many elements to it. Like you have to know and excel at the passing game, but you also have to be aware of the running game. You have to help in the running game. You got to help in the pass protection game. They say, generally speaking, that other than the quarterback, the tight end has the most to learn. How have you gone about trying to learn this offense as you're just beginning your career here?
It's just diving in the playbook, always in the playbook. Obviously, rookie minicamp, we had some installs. Those are super basic installs, but we had those installs, so that's a good start. And then just looking in the playbook, meeting with coach, getting with some vets, just always looking at the plays and getting bets. Because if you go out there and you don't know the plays, obviously you're not going to be successful. You're going to play slow, thinking too much. So the main thing is get the playbook down. That way I can play fast. And then, from there, just keep going.
Have you talked with Cole Kmet directly? Have you met with Caleb Williams yet? Are the plans to get together with the receivers and the quarterback in the offseason after these mini camps end?
This week is a good start. Like I said, we just had rookie minicamp, so kind of haven't been able to pass through with the vets. But now that we're all in the same building at the same time, it's gonna ramp up for sure, and I'm excited about it.
So by all accounts, you're going to be ready to begin like full go workouts by training camp, maybe before training camp. But at this point, I would imagine that you're doing a lot of running and doing a lot of things, but you can't probably lift yet, right? With a shoulder injury, certainly you got to be careful about overhead stuff. I always recommend lower weights and building up. Where are you at in terms of just being able to lift? Are you anxious to get going on that? Do you miss it, or are you kind of used to being limited?
No, I mean, obviously I'm anxious. I want to be able to do everything. This is the nature of it. I'm a competitor. I want to go out there and do it all. But you got to know, you got to be smart, and we got some time. So just take it slow. Just listen to the training staff. Just do what I can at the best of my ability. I'm lifting, but like you said, you got to take it light. Just day by day, stack the bricks,
And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm just taking it one day at a time, staying where my feet are.
Stack the bricks. I like that. So you're in Lake Forest. I heard you compare that a little bit favorably to Ann Arbor. What are your impressions of just being in the Chicago area? Have you been into the city yet? You have any impressions of Chicago overall? I know it's not been long, but people are pretty excited about your arrival.
Yeah, I haven't been in the city yet, just in this Lake Forest area. And like I said, it's beautiful. It's a nice area. And the people I've met, the people have been super nice, good people. Like, you know, I've kind of just been in the hotel and the facility, so I haven't obviously done a whole lot. But yeah, this far, I'm a big fan of it. The people are great. I'm excited to keep exploring.
Are you going to do anything, take any trip or go anywhere? What's your game plan for just the off season?
Well, I think, you know, I don't have a plan yet, but I think just being around here and just staying here, you know, getting right with the training room, in the training room, getting right with the vets, you know, maybe go home if I get some time, see the family, or they'll come up here. But right now I'm just focused on getting back to the plan.
Not building any fences, are you? Stay off the horses, too.
Yep.
Great stuff. Hey, Colston, congratulations. We're really excited to get a chance to meet you and to watch you and follow your career. Really just a great time in your life.
Thanks, Colston.
Yep, thank you guys so much.
That is Colston Loveland. He is the newest Bears player, and we are looking forward to getting to know him a little bit.
Yeah, sharp guy. Sharp guy, good impression, and nice addition to the Bear offense. Ben Johnson's going to have a lot of fun calling plays for him.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.